Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
This is it. The time has come.
Saturday night's all right for fighting.
The right hand puts him down.
Get in the ring and go the distance with Fight Night.
You're better than that.
On TalkSport.
You're listening to the Fight Night podcast on TalkSport with me, Gareth Davis. In the studio with me this week, the one and only Mr. Duke McKenzie, MBE, former three-weight world champion. We began by talking about Duke and his life and his dogs. Get this! Duke McKenzie, this is your life.
Oh, thank you.
You're 61 this year, aren't
61,
you?
61, May the 5th.
Yeah, you look fantastic, by the way.
Thanks, John.
You're a former IBF flyweight, WBO bantamweight, WBO junior featherweight world champion, but you also challenged for a fourth world title, which I'd remiss of me forgotten against Steve Robinson, didn't you?
I did, yeah, and I lost, but I feel that I was never going to win the fight, but I was in the fight, if you see what I mean. When I say I wasn't going to win, obviously I went in there with the intent to win, but I came up short. But it's my fourth world championship challenge, and I'd won three previously. And when I look back at my career now, I can look back quite fondly and think to myself, well, I've done it. Do you see what I mean? I've got no regrets. Would I do it again? Probably not.
Really?
Yeah, probably not.
Really? Why?
Yeah, I'd rather be an actor. I want to be like Denzel Washington and, do you know what I mean, star in movies or something like that. And
so those 46 fights, 39 wins, 20 knockouts. When you look back on it now,
yes,
26 years ago when you stopped, 1998,
yes,
you think, man, why? Do you feel an underachiever in some ways?
No, that's the whole point. I think I've overachieved. I think people that venture back into the sport of boxing, because it's the hardest sport in the world, are probably underachievers, and if anything, I've overachieved. Without blowing my own trumpet, you know.
Why did you overachieve? Come on! Incredibly talented athlete.
Yeah, sure. But
you were
indefatigable
fitness.
Yeah. When I say I overachieved, I mean the amount of championships that I've won. It's quite unparalleled, right? You know, British champion twice, two different weights, European champion, challenged twice for two separate European championships. Three division world champion. You don't get that every day of the book, so that's overachieving, surely.
There's no other Brit that's done that, isn't that? Right, well, Ricky Burns has actually since you.
Since me, yeah.
Is he the only one?
As far as I'm aware.
I'm trying to think of others who've...
Bob Fitzsimmons in 1992.
I'm talking about in our lifetime.
Oh, yeah, sure, in our generation. I mean, you might even have an argument for saying I'm the first, because Bob Fitzsimmons never boxed in this country. He left at the age of, I believe, seven, went to Australia, never returned, never boxed in this country.
Went to America, blah, blah, blah.
Yep. But obviously this country want to claim him as their own because he's a Brit. That's all well and good. But he didn't box here, so I could have an argument for saying I'm the first. But like I say, I think boxing's been very, very kind to me. I met a tremendous manager in Mickey Duff who nurtured me, got me the right fights at the right time, took me all over the world, learnt me my trade, A, B, C, D, and the rest is... it's history, isn't it? And it is nice to be able to say, I've created British boxing history, so you, mate, need to pull your finger out and get me into the Hall of Fame.
I'm going
to
get back on it. I mean, I thought we'd got it over the line. In my weird half... I'm not weird, but in my half dreams, I thought you had become a Hall of Famer.
No. Listen, for any boxer that's laced on a pair of gloves, at the end of your career, you just want appreciation. You can't get a bigger accolade, I don't believe, when your career's finished than to be inducted into the International Boxing Hall of Fame. Mm. It's nice, but it's beautiful being in the British Boxing Hall of Fame. Dave Harris and Paul Fairweather have done an amazing job with that organisation.
Mm.
And
agreed.
Yeah, they put me in there, which I'm extremely honoured about. But to be able to be inducted into the International Boxing Hall of Fame is the icing on the cake.
You mentioned there, Mickey Duff. If you want loyalty, get a dog. You've got a few dogs now.
I've got two dogs. I've got
Trevor.
Trevor's my beagle.
I always remember Trevor. Yeah,
yeah. He's 11 now, and he's just got over a massive operation. Actually, he slipped a disc in his spine, and he was really ill with it. But
is he a fighter or not?
Oh, absolutely a fighter. He was fighting every step of the way. He's still alive, thank God. You know, he ain't gone. Trevor's great, but my wife's just got a cockapoo, Jasper. She calls him. Honestly, Jasper's like a shadow. He follows her everywhere, and when she goes out, he loses his mind. Honestly, I can't console him. So my wife literally
console him or control him.
Console him.
Okay.
He cries.
Oh, really?
He stands by the front door, waits for her.
So he's her dog.
Oh, listen, he bays for her.
He's a one woman dog. Yeah.
They're inseparable. They're inseparable. Dog. He sleeps on the bed. Honestly,
I couldn't be having that. Hang on a minute. We're getting too deep into.
Let me tell you,
I know
the
it's
rest.
Late.
Let
I know.
Tell,
no, yeah, don't ever. No, ease up.
No.
There's boundaries on this show.
No, my wife brushes his teeth, Gareth. Ah. Gareth, listen. She brushes. She brushes.
Gareth,
I swear to God. Every night, Jasper sits on the bed.
Does she shave him in the mornings as well?
I'm getting to that. He's got.
This is too much.
Listen, he's got like this cream she puts on his feet, on his paws. She's got like these
God, so you never
stuff.
Get a massage then?
Oh, listen, I want to be Jasper. I love Jasper so much.
I want to be Jasper.
Jasper's, do you know what he does as well? He looks at me.
I'm crying.
He's got these big brown eyes, right?
Yeah.
He looks at me. And he doesn't move his head. If I'm on the
side, he's got you over.
He's
got you over a barrel. Do you realise that?
I put my hands up. I kiss him in his mouth. I do. I'm joking.
I'm really worried about you, Duke.
No,
I've been here 3 hours
him.
Now, and,
no.
and we did, this didn't come up, but
no,
I've got
him.
The sweats. I'm worried.
Yeah, Jonathan, listen.
I'm not Jonathan Ross.
Sorry,
I'm Gareth
sorry,
Davis.
Sorry,
no,
sorry.
It feels like a Jonathan Ross show right now.
I thought it was John Rawling. You're right,
listen,
it's late.
He's grey in his 80s and hasn't got my hair.
Oh, okay, yeah.
He's not in his 80s, I'm teasing.
No, honestly, my little Jasper, he's not mine, he's my wife's dog, but he's beautiful and... we're lucky to have him, and he's so well trained. You know, he's like he's nearly two now, and you know he's off lead, and he runs 100 miles an hour. He's a beautiful dog.
Right, that's Jasper's career. Let's get back to your career. I'm glad he's happy anyway.
Okay.
I'm glad he's happy living in the family because your kids are grown up, and I know you've got grandkids as well, like I have. And
I'm a granddad.
I know, but the weird thing is. You know, your career, I mean, I started in about 1990, your career ended in 98, but you go back such a long time in the sport. And I was thinking about this on the way in tonight. Lennox Lewis was around then, Frank Bruno was around, Gary Mason. There were a lot of heavyweights at the time.
Yeah.
It was a real generation of heavyweights, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's when
heavyweights
really ruled the roost. They ruled.
Was Bugner still around
just about, yeah. Frank Bruno had beaten Jojo Bugner at that point.
And boxing was very popular, and it was on ITV, and it was on BBC.
Sports Night.
Sports Night
of Harry
Wednesday night, even though sometimes the fights took place on a Tuesday.
That's correct.
And they were out on TV on a Wednesday.
That's right.
The Cartel or whatever they were called at the time.
Mickey Duff,
Astaire,
Mike Barrett,
Lawless,
Jarvis Astaire, and Terry Lawless.
Yeah, they were great for boxing.
Yeah,
Frank Warren might disagree.
Yeah, Frank was just coming onto the scene then. He was just a young, fresh-faced young man coming onto the scene then. And actually, when I first turned professional, Frank Warren turned me down. He didn't want to promote or manage me. He did later on, after I'd won all my world championships, when I boxed Steve Robinson, Frank Warren promoted that fight as my promoter. Mm. But when I first turned professional, he turned me down.
How do you see it now? I mean, like you said, when you were talking to Jane earlier, if someone offered you $1 million to fight, you know...
A guy that's had two fights. Well, he had actually had one fight going into the
Which
fight.
Which is this one
AJ.
Now? Oh, this is Ngannou you're talking
about.
Yeah,
sorry,
no, not Jake
about,
Paul. Yeah,
I'm talking about Ngannou, right?
Yeah.
He'd had one fight going into the AJ fight. He was never going to beat AJ, not in my book, and that was my prediction if anybody had
asked
me.
He didn't beat Fury.
No.
But, by the way, did he?
It's debatable.
How did you score it?
It's debatable. I thought Fury might have just nicked it.
Yeah, that, exactly.
Just nicked it
by a couple of rounds.
Yeah, just nicked it. But we're talking about the heavyweight champion of the world. Fury should have done what AJ did to him. Do you see what I mean? But that was actually...
Styles do make fights.
And
Ngannou had his golden moment and became a player, didn't
that
he?
That was his
And he deserved it.
That was his 36.
Look at his Out of Africa story, Duke.
Yeah, sure.
You must sympathise.
The bigger picture, sure.
It's isn't it always the bigger picture?
Yeah.
But anyway, so tell me about the bigger picture when you were there.
Yeah. The bigger picture was every weight division had a superstar in it. Yeah. Every weight division, you know, from flyweight right through to heavyweight, every division had superstars in it. Mm. Flyweight, there was a Sotchitalada, a brilliant guy from Thailand at flyweight. Yep. Bantamweight, you had Jeff Chandler. Featherweight, you had Salvador Sanchez. Lightweight, you had Alexis Arguello. Like welterweight, you had Aaron Pryor. Welterweight, Sugar Ray Leonard. Like middleweight, you had Mike McCallum. Middleweight,
old Sugar Ray Leonard by that point, though, wasn't he?
No, I'm talking about prime. We're talking about prime Leonard.
Oh, you're talking prime.
And welterweight.
Oh, and you're talking late 80s
mid to late 80s.
Leonard, keep going.
Leonard at welterweight, Mike McCallum at light heavyweight, Marvin Hagler at middleweight, Michael Spinks at light heavyweight, and Tyson at heavyweight.
Yeah.
Legends, superstars right across the board.
So, let's fast forward then to now.
Yeah. Couldn't name you an elite band of fighters like that.
Come on. Inui over four weight divisions right now. Super bantam.
No, we'll start. Well, you start. You start me at flyweight. We start at flyweight, and you go through the top.
Well, you could say Julio Cesar Martinez, couldn't you? You know, the guy that beat Sonny Edwards, Charlie Edwards, but that was denied. He's gone up in weight.
Right.
He's a decent fighter.
No.
Noya Inui was down there as well, bantamweight, and he's gone up. He's at super bantam now. Yeah. He's undisputed.
Yeah. Has he moved up super bantam weight?
Yeah, he's fighting. Okay. Lewis Neary and Undisputed in Japan on May the 6th.
Whoa,
yeah.
Oh, mate.
So you've got Chocolatito is still knocking around. Estrada's around.
Yes.
The trouble is they don't have the resonance that they should have.
Yeah. Why do you think that is?
Because there's a massive focus on the bigger guys.
Yeah, but look at the bigger guys, John. Compare that. Why do I keep calling you John? You look like. Turn that way a little bit. Yeah, you look like John Rawlings. That's
no, I
why.
Don't.
No, you don't.
It's fine. Just call me John.
Gareth,
you call everyone John.
Yeah,
the
taxi driver,
when we got out of the taxi, he said, you called him John.
Yeah, sorry,
this producer is called Simeon, you called him John.
Yeah, but he looks like a John.
Yeah. Everyone looks like John too. We're all Johns, yeah?
Okay.
Being John. But being John night.
Okay. But like I say, when I was coming up and growing up and going through the boxing eras, there was superstars in every weight division.
Yeah, but there still is. I disagree with you, and this is about you. So tell me if these guys would have fitted in that era. Noya Inui, would he have fitted in the era? Arta Beterbiev and Bivol, would they have fitted in the era?
Nah.
Tyson Fury, would he have fitted in the era?
I don't think he would.
Anthony Joshua, would he have fitted in the era?
I don't think he would.
Do you don't think Tyson Fury had a chance against Mike Tyson?
No. Absolutely.
Do you think Joshua had a chance against him?
Even slimmer.
Okay.
Because as you said, styles make fights, right?
Okay.
Could you imagine Lennox Lewis against AJ? Could you imagine Lennox Lewis against Joshua? Could you imagine a prime Mike Tyson?
I still think Fury beats Joshua Hendley anyway.
Yeah, but we're talking about the yesteryear fighters against the modern day fighters.
Okay.
That was the discussion.
Okay. So let's go. Let's look at super middle. Canelo at super middleweight against...
Canelo
against who? Mike McCallum, you're saying?
He wouldn't have a hope in hell of beating Mike McCallum. Not even a chance.
What, not even holding his own?
Slim and none. Mike McCallum would have destroyed.
Okay, fair enough.
I guarantee.
What movement, the waist, the power.
The body snatcher.
Come on. Well, Mike Watson remembers well, and Mike always attributes that fight, by the way, not the one with Chris Eubank
when
I speak to Michael.
Listen, Mike McCallum is a legend of the sport, and Mike McCallum would beat any current past middleweight, super middleweights.
Is he on that same level as a Roy Jones Jr.? Or you didn't mention him just now, by the way.
Yeah, sorry.
He was slightly later.
But, yeah, he was later. But
James Toney, by the way.
I was going to get on to him, but we haven't got that far. So
because again, I mean, listen,
like I say, the fighters of the old school, 80s, 90s, that breed of fighter.
They were different.
Completely different to the breed of fighters.
But maybe the 70s fighters were different as well. And they could withstand more and they had more wars. And we know more now about brain injury.
Have you ever seen Ray Mercer v. Burt Cooper?
Mm.
Right. If you're looking for just an out and out classy war in the heavyweight division, look no further. Or watch Evander Holyfield v. Burt Cooper.
Yeah.
You know, watch Burt Cooper v. Michael Mora.
The dance was different. The dance was different.
Yeah, but
it?
All these guys were being stacked up and fighting one another. There wasn't none of the politics involved as there is now, where the best don't fight the best. The best were fighting the best.
Well, up next, Chris Congo joined us for three sections in the studio, fascinatingly talking about his life, his faith, his abstinence. We also talked about where he's headed in his career, what he believes in. It was an absolutely riveting 45 minutes.
Good work here from Congo again, keeping it long. That's where he's best. Big uppercut there from Congo. Charles the head back.
And Marku felt the weight of that one. Took it well, but that was a really significant punch from Congo.
Judge Michael Alexander sees it 96 to 94. While Judge Mark Bates sees it 96 to 93. And Judge Steve Gray sees it 98 to 92. Declaring your winner by unanimous decision, and now the IBO Intercontinental Welterweight Champion, Chris Too Slick Congo.
You're listening to Fight Night on TalkSport with me, Gareth Davis. I'm joined tonight by my old pal and three-weight world champion, legend of British boxing, Duke McKenzie, MBE, who's in the studio with me. I'm going to renew right now as Chris Congo joins us. Yes, Chris, this man should be in the International Hall of Fame, and I'm going to start the campaign again tonight.
Of course, you keep saying that, mate, and you ain't done it.
I'm going to get Chris down after the program. 60 years old, still handsome. And earlier he was telling us, before you got here, Chris, that he could have beaten up Gerald Miller at the Day of Reckoning back in December.
I'd have beat him. Chris would have beat him. His coach would have beat him. You're his coach, right? Yeah, he'd have beat him as well. Twice on Sunday.
He's had two bars of chocolate already and he's on top form. And he always needs his chocolate this time. No, he's a legend of British boxing. He and I used to do a show on TalkSport a long time ago.
We did the first ever Fight Night shows together.
Yeah, it's a long time ago now. Okay. So we're kind of celebrating tonight. But we're also celebrating you rising again on Easter Sunday, if I can say it like that, after more than a year out of the ring, to defeat your bitter rival. I don't know if he's a bitter rival, but certainly there was some grudge in that. Florian Marco on points at the O2 Arena. You won by unanimous decision, 96-94, 96-93, and 98-92 after 10 rounds. It was his first professional defeat in his 15-fight career. You got cut to the right eye early. Tell us about the experience of it and the big crowd and your co-main event and just tell us about the night and how it felt.
I mean, it felt good, you know. Sorry, my voice is kind of gone. I don't know why. But
Emotion.
It felt good. Everything we'd done in the gym, we had drilled everything down to the ring walk, down to his crowd, down to him doing certain things like pulling up his shorts. He's not ready then, so... a punch in them moments, and
That's Lee Wiley and Ben Davison thinking there, isn't
100%,
it? 100%. And Barry Smith, of course.
Yeah. Of course, and we had a great training camp, and I'm just happy to get the victory.
Isn't that called focus when you're looking at those movements? It's like you being focused on what you do best and what they don't do best, and that's a strategy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's called breaking down the opponent, which is what he's done, which is sensible. You look at what the other guy does and you look how you can capitalise on that. Mm. And that's precisely what he's done. That's why he's got the victory. That's why we talked to him tonight, not the other guy.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, Chris comes in even if he loses. He don't care.
I'll come in whenever.
No, he doesn't care. He's never beaten. Do you know that?
Yeah.
Congo is never beaten.
Never.
Yeah. No, I do know that about you. You're a very cool, colourful character. And there's a lot more inside you to come out, I think. And it's a pleasure to have you on tonight. And
thank you.
Can I be? You might think this is a strange comment. I made it on air on the night when we were commentating on your fight. Howard Foster stopped you holding at one point.
Yeah,
and I think it did you a favour. Is that a weird thing to say?
No, I mean, at that moment he said
in about the fourth round, wasn't
it? Yeah. He said, "Listen, any more holding, I'm gonna take off points." So I think then was a time where we had to be smart. But what's good is that he wasn't really good working inside, but one thing we done, just in case, we had it in a locker anyway. We'd done worked on that in the gym.
But then you completely outboxed him when you weren't allowed to hold anymore.
Of course.
Then you took over in the fight.
So was that part of your progression? Was that part of the strategy?
Fascinating.
Or was that part of just the whole part, what you was trying to do? Was you 100%. Hurt at that point when you was holding?
Never.
Or was that part of the strategy, your strategy, to tie him up, mess him around?
Of course.
In the fight.
Because we thought you was going to come in strong and want to work inside and want to keep me there, so...
She's just trying to nullify what he was doing, break him up on the 100%. Inside, right?
We said, if he does come and you're on the ropes, give him a bit of traffic, take it away, get underneath, turn him back to your boxing.
So if you did it again, would you need to do that again?
Probably. Well... It's there if I need to.
Okay.
You know? Now you change tactics, champ.
Well, of course, he's listening in now.
Trust me. All right. If you listen to this, if you're saying you're gonna, if you fought him again and you're gonna have the same tactics, he's gonna be ready for it. So you just switch up on him. Do you see what I mean?
We'll be ready and we'll definitely switch it up.
Let me ask you a question, champ. So you said there was a bit of inactivity, right? 12 months, you said.
Yeah.
13, what was going on then?
13. I mean, just trying to get fights. You know how hard it is.
Yeah, sure.
Coming off a loss.
Okay.
You know, no one wants to answer the phone.
A very close loss to Ekwe Esserman.
No one wants to answer the phone.
Split or majority?
It was majority, yeah.
Okay.
Very close fight.
It's just one of them ones. But why I believe the performance was good was because during that time, I didn't go away from the gym. I kept on working.
Yeah, sure.
So I had nothing going on, but I was still training like there was a fight coming up. So that's why I'm able to perform at that level. And now I've had the activity, and what's good is that now you're only going to get better performances because
You've got to stay active. You have to stay active. You've got to stay wing sharp, right?
Definitely.
You know that.
Definitely.
And, you know, listen, all your hard work and dedication will pay off. You need to get out as quickly as possible.
Of course.
Once that eye's gone, that swelling's gone down, you've got to drive your promoter mad and get him to get you out again.
Definitely. No stitches. Is there stitches?
No
or not?
Stitches. No, that's good. It's good.
You know? So you were telling us that you haven't really gone out much since you've just kind of sat back and relaxed.
Yeah.
Is that because the body did need to recover? And because, you know, you've got the swag.
Of course.
You like to go out.
I like to go out now? Not as what I did when I was young, but I think now I'm thinking about longevity in a game. So it's all about relaxing. I've had my massages, been to the spa and in my house, just chilled out and just letting the body proper recover, you know? So, and that's what I've done. And then Monday I'm back in the gym.
You got to live the life.
Go, Duke, go.
Yeah, you got to live the life. You know that. And what you're saying is you're starting to live the life. You can't party when you're training, right? And you hear some guys would make...
I say party, I mean going out and just enjoying a little bit.
You
being
can't
out
do that.
In the open air.
You
being
can't
out
do that.
Like, no.
No, you can't do that. If he wants to be number one...
Is this late for you right now, then, 9:51?
And a world champion, not just a British, a European or a Commonwealth, then he's got to live the life, which means you don't go out on your birthday. You don't go out at Christmas. You make the sacrifices. You have sex for 3 months.
Yeah.
You go to bed early. 6 o'clock.
Hang on a minute, steady on.
No. But these are the things you have to sacrifice if you want to be.
Oh, that's not
number one. If you want to be number one,
you didn't do that.
Three months.
What, are you talking about the sex now? Yeah?
Three months. Every fight.
Like a gladiator of old.
Gladiator role. In bed.
I thought it was 10 weeks, not three months.
If you want to be the best, if you want to be the best, you've got to sacrifice.
I hear others that like it on. Anthony Joshua likes it on a Friday before a Saturday fight.
Let me tell you something. That he's pulling the wool over your eyes.
Right, Magnum, the key now is, how long does Congo wait?
You know what?
Keep that to you, champ. No.
I keep that to myself.
We've got six minutes to break. Listen.
When I started this year, I said I'm going to build habits.
Yeah.
I'm going to stay away from women.
That's it.
Focus on my spirituality, which I have. So I ain't touched one woman this year, and we're in April. And
you've done the 3 months. So
I feel a lot sharper in my mind.
But
I feel a lot sharper, more energetic.
That makes sense.
And I'm on point.
So you don't go out because you don't want to fall in love, then, yeah?
I mean,
listen, it's not about
there's a time for everything.
He wants to be called a bona fide world champion.
100%. I know, I get it.
So if you make the sacrifice, it's going to happen for you. Because you know what happens is, if you mess around, you go out, you party, you do this, you try to do both.
You never did in your 20s.
Never. I wasn't going anywhere doing anything I wasn't supposed to be, ever.
I don't believe you.
See it like this. If you
it's
read...
not what I've heard. Listen,
don't believe the hype. What I'm saying to you is, when I came in here this evening, you said to me, why do I look so good,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, you do. You
60
look
years of age,
you
right?
You look fantastic.
I'm not a player. You got to live the life. If you want to be number one, you got to live the life. This young man's got every opportunity to become number one if he lives the life.
Definitely.
He's got and the skills, he's got the
look
ability,
at Ricky
and the drive and ambition.
In his book, he said Floyd Mayweather beat him because stayed in the gym all the time. He was out in the pubs with everyone. So his career wasn't as long as Floyd's.
Bad habits, yeah. Bad habits, no, I covered that entire career, and he used to balloon up to... Once he got to about 13 stone, he realised he needed to come back to 10 stone. And it did weigh on him, and it has affected his body. I mean, genuinely, I'm joking with you as well here, but...
Of course.
Let me take it another direction, which is what I was kind of going towards, first of all, is when you've had success like you had last weekend...
Yeah.
In this modern world of ours, Duke, where, you know, when you were boxing up to 1998, papers were very big. So if you got an article written about you, it did, you know, millions of reads, you know, on the mainstream news. There were only three or four channels. Then these guys now, they need to put themselves out there a little bit. You know, I meant it in that way a little bit, like... Mm-hmm. You know, did you go out in the community afterwards? Have you done more social media?
As a product, as a brand.
Yeah, no, it's in that way. Is that important for you at this stage as well?
100%.
And I'm fascinated about the spirituality, and we must talk about it.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I'm doing some community stuff next week with Millwall.
Nice.
So doing a lot of community work, going to the gyms.
Football club, yeah?
Yeah, football club. Going to the gyms and just doing as much as I can for the community, you know, because... It's the younger generation that's going to look up to someone like me. And I want them to see an example of what they want to grow up to become like. So definitely.
And tell us about your spirituality then. And is that a new thing? Has it always been there? I mean, it clearly helps you with sacrifice and dedication to your sport and faith in what you're doing.
Of course. I mean, this year I said I wanted to focus more on God and just really take my time and understand what it is. You know, there's definitely a higher power. I believe there's definitely
there's definitely an higher force. No question.
For sure.
No question.
You look at all the top celebrities these days, and they're saying, look, there's definitely a Jesus Christ out there. So I'm taking my time to look into it. And
where does that come from,
really,
Chris?
Just culture at the moment. Culture, my family as well. And just...
When that bell goes, you've got nothing else.
Exactly
you've
what I was
going to
say.
You've got nothing else.
Exactly.
And he will be in fights where he calls on Jesus Christ throughout the fight and asks for guidance, asks for strength, asks for courage, asks for conviction, and those things will be answered. If you believe it, you receive it. I don't want to sound like I'm preaching, but it's a fact.
No, preach, because it's a beautiful thing. You know, and I believe in it as well. Yeah, I believe in it.
He will find levels of strength, endurance.
Of course.
Can I throw something in the mix here now?
Go ahead.
We're going to talk about who you want to fight next and how active you want to be, and Duke's rightly mentioned that. Can I throw something in there? And I'm sorry to bring up trauma, but I find it inspiring about you. Duke may not know this, but you overcame teenage trauma to make your career in boxing, having been stabbed as a 16-year-old.
Yeah.
Talk to us about that and how it affected your life.
Only if it doesn't upset you.
No. I mean, it's in the past. And growing up in certain areas, there's always trouble, you know. And not that I was looking for it, but it was just a matter of wrong place at the wrong time, you know. And it could have ended my boxing career, but...
Could have ended your life.
It could have ended my life, but we thank God. And like I said, there's a higher power out there protecting me. And
hallelujah.
I'm here.
Hallelujah.
You know?
Is that what you do when you go into the local gyms in your area in South London and go and talk? Because Duke's done it forever as well.
Mm-hmm.
And do you talk to young people about maybe trying to avoid being in gangs or going to the gym and not carrying knives? Because like it only takes one, or a gun or a knife. It only takes one incident and you might ruin someone else's life, but you're going to ruin your own as well. You know?
100%. I mean, that's the whole aim of doing a lot of community work and being in the community and talking about it, you know? Mm. So we're definitely...
The government should make it absolutely compulsory to bring schoolboy boxing back into schools.
Yeah,
because if they did that, it would cut down knife crime. It would give kids the discipline that they need and the structure that they need. And you know, because you're a professional fighter, you know what boxing gives you. Mm. It's made you self-sufficient, right? Strong mentally, keeps you out of gangs, sure. I should say, sorry. And obviously you was in the wrong place at the wrong time, as you've just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
But could you imagine if schools today had schoolboy boxing in? What a role model you would be, even going in there, showing these young kids what they're doing is wrong, but how successful they can be if they do it right, to be like yourself.
Definitely.
How inspiring would that be?
It'll make a big difference, you know, and I would love that to come back. But Let's see.
Can I get your pledge to do something? I've been involved in the last few weeks with the All-Parliamentary Party group on boxing, and there's an MP for Bradford East called Imran Hussein, and they're campaigning, he and 25 MPs and people from the Lords, Lord Addington, who's a big sports advocate, campaigning for funding for grassroots boxing in this country.
That would be unbelievable.
There is none. There is none. It's not on the government sports strategy.
But why?
So, exactly. So there's a big campaign, and I went to Portcullis House in Parliament the other night with a guy called Alex Le Gavel from Matchroom's community programme as well, and a few other people, and boxers from up north and amateur clubs, and covered it in the Telegraph, and I've covered it on this show in the last couple of weeks. I'd love to get your name pledged to that as well, because there are 1,055 grassroots boxing clubs in this country, 5,000 coaches, 150,000 participants, they believe. Yeah. There's zero funding in government strategy for those clubs. Wow. And the social collateral that from people being involved in those clubs is extraordinary.
Gareth, it's
the social capital, the well-being, the fitness, the understanding of society, the lack of people going into gangs, the confidence not to carry a knife, to stay away. There's so many positives.
It gives you life skills.
Would you be involved in that?
100%.
Would you come to Parliament and speak?
I would love to come and speak, definitely, and let them know what it's done for myself.
And what happened to you?
You know, and speak on that as well. I will be more than... I would love that to happen.
I think it's an absolute disgrace and a travesty that schoolboy boxing isn't reintroduced. You know, they took, you know,
it doesn't have to be full contact.
No, of course it doesn't. It doesn't have to be full contact.
I think people need to realise that, you know, it doesn't have to be.
But boxing isn't about just getting punched in the head. It gives you so much more and does so much more for you, right from, you know, from your head to your toes, right across the board. You know, it makes you so self-sufficient. You know, teach you how to stay clean. It teaches you how to cook. Teach you how to look after yourself. Make weight. Go to bed early. There's so many health benefits.
Stay away from girls.
There's so many, so many health benefits.
This is a theme tonight.
So many health benefits.
Well, I'm not sure about that. Come on,
let's get it right.
No, but if I really, and I'd like Duke. You speak so passionately and so well, and always have done on it. I think it is time we put pressure on. You know, because there's big money being made all over the world in big fights at the moment.
Sure.
And boxing is a top-down sport. I mean, even off-air, we were talking to you to get back onto your career. We were talking about the importance of your management team, the importance of the promoter you're with, because that escalator you're on, or that conveyor belt, there are stronger positions than not. Duke was with Mickey Duff, who controlled things at the time. He was one of the most powerful matchmakers and promoters in the world. In fact, the four guys with him who ran it all, they were called...
the cartel,
the cartel. Wow. Because they controlled boxing in the UK. They controlled the Albert Hall.
Yep.
They controlled Wembley, which were the two big venues at the time. Wow. They controlled when boxing went out. They controlled... There was only one channel showing it at the time,
BBC.
Which was BBC's. So they controlled when it all went out. So where are you positionally at the moment? Because presumably in 2-3 fights, you want to be challenging for a world title.
Of course. I mean, right now, all my fights are on Sky, so I'm with Ben Shalom, of course, and man, we're just working and getting.
We've talked about your life. Mm. We've talked about the importance of boxing. We've talked about how you got victory last weekend. Let's talk about the welterweight division right now. As Duke pointed out, just before we came back, it's always been a strong division. Talk me through what you see. Obviously, Terence Crawford is up there as the leading figure.
Yeah,
I think in most people's minds,
number one, undisputed.
Is that fair?
100%. He's done it. He's won all the belts, and he's the number one. You know, he's the number one.
And how do you is in your mind's eye, is he someone that you're targeting? Do you want that fight, or can you not allow yourself to dream about fights like that yet?
Fights like that, I gotta keep doing what I'm doing, then I'll get there. I know I can't just leap and take a fight and with him. You know, I gotta keep building. Beat fighters like Marku and other people in the division, then I can move on, you know?
It's all about moving through the ranks, champ, and getting the experience, obviously. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
Sometimes you can ask for a world title fight and you're not ready. In your mind's eye, you're ready.
Mm-hmm.
But physically, mentally, emotionally, you're
not ready
for it.
You fear no one.
Yeah, sure. I mean, listen, you know and I know, right now, you're not ready for Terence Crawford. If they offered you to fight tomorrow, you'd have to take it because that's your opportunity. Do you see what I mean? Doesn't mean you're going to win it, but it means you might get the opportunity. Mm-hmm. But what a fight that they could do for you is give you the experience. If, let's just say you don't win it, then you have to jump down a peg, then you're ready for that level of fighter. But that's what you don't want. If you do things right, in a year, 18 months from now, you're a fresh 31. You're not an old 31. You're not a 31-year-old that's got hundreds of miles on their clock and you're ready to go. Do you see what I mean? You're a young 31. So the next 18 months, for my money, looking at you now and talking to you and getting to know you a little bit and looking at your career and what you've done and what you ain't done, the next 18 months are absolutely so paramount for your career. That'll tell you where you're going, basically. Yeah,
definitely.
What did you make of... I don't know if it's happening, but there was mention of Chris Eubank Jr. facing Terence Crawford. Presumably, Crawford would have to fight him at middleweight.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
there's no way that Chris is going to make 147.
No.
I mean, look how ill he looked at... What was it? 140... Was it 157?
158.
158. Yeah. I mean, look like
let's
a
get
skeleton.
It. Let's get it right. Nobody beats Crawford right now.
No one.
No one beats Crawford.
What would Crawford do to Chris Eubank here in the UK then?
No, listen, oh, go on. Do you want to answer that or do you want me to answer that? I think we've both got the same answer.
That's inevitable, but go ahead.
You know, on any weight division, any planet, any universe, Jupiter, Mars, Saturn, or Uranus is going to beat Terence Crawford.
I just called to say I love you, Duke.
Listen, pound for pound, that man is the best fighter on the planet, bar none.
Best.
What he does to fighters is incredible. The way he switches
so
stance,
efficient,
so yeah, effortlessly, yeah,
yeah. And he's spiteful as well.
He's spiteful. He's got just about everything. But it's a great role model for you to have, to 100%. Watch and to learn from, because you still can develop and get better.
So with your management team, who are you talking about? You know, where are the gradations for you from here moving upwards? There's a Conor Benn going to be around at some point if he gets his license back.
I mean, if he gets his license back. Mm. But now we're moving on. I want the European title.
There you go.
So
the European
is that with?
Title, Jordi Wise from France.
Yeah,
we want to get him, bring him down to the UK, and let's make
and
the fight
beat
happen.
Him up.
100%.
Yeah, you sounded
that's sensible.
Can you main event for that one? Are they promising you a main event?
I mean, we got to talk about it, but
that's a headline fight. That's a headline fight. Yeah. Make no mistake. That's a European title fight. That's effectively half the world these days, right?
Yeah.
So that means if you win that, you're like half a world champion. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
Which gets you an official world ranking.
Of course.
If you can get that fight, I don't know where you stand contractually with that, but if your promoter, Ben Shalom, can get you that fight in the UK, come on. Listen, you'd have to be considered to be quite a heavy favourite of pulling that one off.
Definitely. And I believe I can beat him. He's a good opponent. He's 30-0 with one draw. And I just think I got the beating of him. So
can I get your opinion as a boxer on this Conor Benn situation? I hope you get that fight. Hopefully we'll be there with Talk Sports.
Mm-hmm.
If Conor Benn he didn't lose his appeal, but the Boxing Water Control and the UK Anti-Doping won their appeal.
Yeah.
Many people, myself included, think it's a victory for boxing because otherwise the system would be ridden over roughshod.
Definitely.
Because they didn't do strict liability. They they did, you know, on jurisdiction, which is who did the testing, not what happened with the testing, you know, i.e. strict liability, what was found in the system. And he may be innocent, and the testing may have been wrong, and it may have been contaminated. Stop shaking your head, Duke McKenzie.
No, because these people don't normally get it wrong, do they?
Yeah,
if there's laws and rules and regulations, you've got to stick by the laws, the rules and the regulations. The fact that he's been out for so long will tell you there's something not right. And if there's something not right, then you have to pay the price. He's had to pay the ultimate price by not fighting.
He's gone round the block to the front door again, in my view. They're going to have to start again.
There's nothing going to hurt
him
more.
There's no other way around it.
Yeah, there's nothing going to hurt him more by not being active, not fighting. And if once he starts fighting again, as was proven in his last fight, he struggled. Now, why did he struggle?
He was up against a pretty tough American Jamaican, I thought, who put up a good battle. And
okay,
I think
they
underestimated.
Let's take. No, I'm not going to diss him too much. But the fact still remains is
we don't know if he's world class yet.
he's a long way off that. He's a long way off that. He's a long way off world class. He can talk a good fight and say what he wants all day long. But the fact remains is he's been out of the ring for a long time and there's been a reason for it. And British Boxing Board of Control do not mess about if you've done something illegal and they perceive it to be illegal, they take the proper action. And if they don't take the proper action, then the whole thing comes crashing down.
Well, I haven't been able to in this case because it's been circumvented. Can I ask your opinion on this? I don't know if you know Conor. I don't know if you're friends with these guys. As a fighter yourself, because I found it very odd, that whole scenario that Chris Eubank Jr., and it was obviously based on money, they were both going to earn a huge amount of money, had agreed he would go ahead and have the fight with Conor Ben. And for me, that's going around a system where you're all in an inherently dangerous sport. We don't want to see anyone get damaged irreparably or to die even in the ring, where you can be legally killed, of course. Yeah. And that is the truth.
Yeah, of course
it is. And, you know, it's an average 8 deaths a year, isn't it, in our sport?
Yeah.
How do you feel, Chris, as a fighter, about the safeguarding of that safety net, if you like?
I mean, it's a thing where, obviously, if he did do it, then I believe he should be banned. I don't know if he done it.
A long ban. What kind of length? A four year?
I'm talking 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
Got to be done, you know. This sport is dangerous alone, right? And we're going in there fighting, putting our lives on the line. Mm. And when you're taking certain supplements that's going to enhance you, it's wrong. It's wrong. And if he did take it, then he's got to take the ban, you know. But I don't know. And that's just my opinion on the situation.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's always great to sit with Duke, and he has such amazing views and really deep knowledge on boxing. I wanted to pick his brains about what happens when the bell rings on May the 18th for the Ring of Fire, when Tyson Fury and Alexander Usyk collide. Get this, Duke on Usyk.
Usyk wins. I hate to spoil it for or pour cold water on anybody's parade, but for me, Usyk wins because he's a much more complete all-round fighter. I don't think Fury's boxed anybody like him, and Usyk would be so up for this fight. And a good Alexander Usyk probably holds his own with just about any heavyweight that's ever lived.
Really?
He's that good.
Even with Mike Tyson and his kind of wrecking ball best.
Usyk holds his own with anybody. Do you know what I like about Usyk? Usyk is an intelligent thinking fighter. He's not like a Tyson in that respect. I'm not saying he beats a Tyson, you understand?
No, you're saying he beats him.
No. I didn't say he beat a Tyson. I said he deserves to be in the same
Mike
ring.
Mike Tyson, you mean?
Yeah, Mike Tyson. Tyson. Oh, sorry, no. Sorry, we're talking about Tyson Fury.
No, we are. No, but you're referring there to Mike Tyson.
I'm referring to Mike Tyson.
He'd have been fine in there with Mike Tyson.
Yeah, I'm referring to Mike Tyson.
I don't agree with you.
Yeah, he's not going to beat a Mike Tyson, but he deserves to be in a ring with a Tyson.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Yeah, because he's ring IQ and he's a very intellectual, very, very sensible. He punches perfect. He times himself perfectly. He can nullify the bigger guy's size, and that's what I think he'll do if he fights Tyson Fury. He'll nullify his size. He'll take that size difference away from him, get on the inside, stay in the pocket, work him over, and probably wear him down. Do you see what I mean? That's how I see it.
I think it'll be... I've kind of gone on record with a couple of things. I think Fury's team are looking to go after Usyk because they've seen vulnerabilities. My reports are that from the camp of Alexander Usyk that he's working really hard on his core, which he needs to.
Mm-hmm.
There was a few moments in the Daniel Dubois fight. I do think it was a borderline. I think it was a low blow.
I think that was a low blow.
I thought it was a low blow.
Yeah, I don't think that was
I thought
a low
it was,
blow.
But
personally.
I thought he milked it a little bit, but yeah. I thought it was a low blow.
Okay.
He took his 5 minutes. So for you, and I think this is an important point because this will get our YouTube... subscribers fascinated. So over 12 you believe Usyk
over 12
out-hustles
rounds,
him by 8 rounds to 4 or 7 rounds to
over
5
over 12 rounds Alexander Usyk would be too much for Tyson Fury in terms of work rate. Fury's work rate isn't great at the best of times. He fiddles, he messes around, he faints, he twitches, he wins rounds though. Pardon me?
He wins rounds with that
That's
style.
Against guys that aren't on the same level as an Usyk. Don't forget Usyk is a good all-rounder.
Would Usyk have beaten Vladimir Klitschko?
Yep. For my money, he does.
It's a similar kind of fight to the
Fury one. It's a
where he frustrates him, he can't be hit.
In a way,
Duke, I understand where you're coming from. He did that in the second Anthony Joshua fight.
He can adapt.
In those last four rounds, he stole the fight, didn't he?
Usyk can adapt, where you know Fury can be, you can read him. You know what he's going to do, Tyson Fury. You know, he's going to use his weight, he's going to use his height, and he's going to try and lean on you, spoil with you, push you back if he can, fiddle around, you know, flick his jabs out, put a little combination together, and he just keeps leaning on you. So you can read that quite easily. I think Usyk will read that quite easily. So for my money, if you can read Tyson Fury, then you can beat him. The only problem Usyk will have is that Fury doesn't know what he's going to do from 1 minute to the next when he's in the ring, right? Because you know what he's like. But
he's always delivered when he's had to.
Yeah, I'm not disputing that. I'm not disputing that. But I don't think he's boxed anybody near the calibre of the quality, the class of an Alexander Usyk.
It's fascinating. I still think then it plays into my notion that we may end up with a very controversial draw in this fight.
Oh, God. God forbid. Let's hope it's not a draw because boxing doesn't need any more controversies and draws and close fights and, you know, this guy should have won. And you can see clearly that the other guy should have won. Boxing doesn't need that. Boxing needs one undisputed champion. It would be great to have an undisputed champion at every weight division, which isn't beyond the realms of possibilities right now because some of the weight divisions, welterweight, featherweight, super bantamweight, have got undisputed champions, lightweight, they've got undisputed champions, which is great for the sport. I really believe that is great for the sport. So I would expect Usyk to beat Tyson Fury on points.
So your number, your 1-4 in the world at the moment is then Usyk, Fury, Joshua and Parker, is it?
Usyk, Fury, Joshua, Parker.
Who's 5 and 6 then for you?
Not necessarily in that order.
Okay, so what order do you go then?
I'd go Usyk 1, Usyk 2.
Oh, stop it.
Usyk 3.
Now you need some chocolate.
Usyk is in my book, is number one. Fury, is number two. Yeah, you're right.
Joshua 3 and Parker 4.
Yeah, Joshua 3.
Who are we sliding in at 5 and 6 at the moment then? Does Zhili Zhang belong up there? Does Daniel Dubois?
Zhang definitely deserves a spot in that top 5. Not sure about Daniel Dubois because he's yet to be tested again in a major championship fight.
We're hearing it could be Filip Hrgović and Daniel Dubois. For me, Hrgović, I think he probably cleans up in that fight.
Yeah, I make you right. I mean, listen, obviously, there's several things missing in Daniel Dubois' makeup, which he's been exposed to previously. And
he was good against Jarrell Miller, though, at some day of reckoning.
I could have beaten Jarrell Miller. No, I could have beat.
Woulda, shoulda, coulda.
Yeah, but I could have beat Jarrell, even at 60 years of age. I'd still beat him. You can't really gauge Daniel Dubois on that performance against that level of opposition because the other guy's not exactly Charles Atlas, is he?
I love you. Do you know that? He didn't have a lot to beat. Jarrell Miller.
Yeah, he didn't
all
have a lot
22
to beat.
Stone of him, you'd beat him up.
He's just a big guy. That's all he is, just big. He's just wooden. He's so square and he's round.
It must be like hitting a sofa for Daniel Dubois. Like,
yeah, but there's nothing
hitting
else.
Hitting a sofa over and over again.
Yeah, but you don't have to worry about if there's nothing coming back in return. All Miller does is just swings, and he's so easy to read and get out of the way of.
And then recalculate.
Just jab his head off.
Yeah, you
just counter him to death. He's like that. But there aren't, like I say, there are question marks, I believe, still hanging over Daniel Dubois.
I can't tell you how tired these two are. This is one of the best heavyweight fights that I've witnessed live. Both guys punching themselves to a standstill.
Judge Mark Bates, season 113. To 113, this bout has been ruled a draw.
Edge of the seat stuff for the full 12 rounds. And just when you think one guy's getting hold of it, the other guy come back into it again. Draw, I'm so pleased it was a draw. The draw was the best result. Why? Because we get to see it again. That will go down in history, Gareth, as one of the best British heavyweight fights
ever.
Of all time.
Ever.
One of the best heavyweight fights of all time. Fabio Ward against Fraser Clark last weekend. Duke, I mean, I was there. I mean, I've been talking about it all week. I'm still breathless from it. The kind of sheer lion-heartedness of Fabio Wardley, not the level of boxer that Fraser Clark is. Fraser Clark pilloried for the first 8 fights of his career. What has he got? Has he got any power? Both men bringing it. They were fairly respectful, apart from a few barbs going into it. It was delayed a year. For me, it's one of the... I'm just staggered how much they left in the ring against each other. But it was that both their stock rose, in my view. They deserve a really big payday on a rematch if they do it. And they both showed what each other has and the weaknesses that each other has as well.
Yeah, listen, they both exposed one another's flaws in their makeup. For me, I thought that Wardley just nicked it.
I did. I agree with you.
I thought he
I
just
had him winning 114-112. Yeah.
I thought he just nicked it.
Yeah.
You know, but they left every ounce of energy in that ring, as you're supposed to when you're fighting for a domestic or whatever championship.
British heavyweight, yeah. It was the British, yeah.
No,
wasn't
I'm just
it?
Saying, whether it's British, whether it's European or whether it's the world, they left every ounce of energy in that ring. You know, they could barely stand the pair of them at the end of the fight.
Well, if one had had that little bit to finish the other, they could have done, but neither of them had it.
It would have been game over.
Yeah.
So when you look at it like that, that was great. For entertainment, you know, the cut, you had the knockdown, you had a point deduction, had like every sort of facet going on in that
relentless
fight.
There wasn't a pause. They didn't have a round off, either of them.
Yeah, yeah.
And when they were off, they were staggering, trying to find each other.
They left every ounce of energy in that ring. And that's what you want to see from, particularly from heavyweights, because let's get it right. Heavyweights don't normally fight like that.
No.
So when you hear people like Spenny say it's one of the greatest heavyweight fights of all time, domestically, it's right up there on domestic level. We're not talking about world level because these guys aren't world class, but we're talking about domestic level. It was a good, old fashioned ding dong. You know, cuts, knockdown, point deduction.
But on pure entertainment level,
yeah, they were going
on
for it.
Drama.
Yeah,
they.
That's what I'm saying. That's what created it all. The blood, the clarity you saw.
Yeah.
You know, one getting wobbled and the other one coming back at him. It was
seesawing, and there was ascendancy for one and ascendancy for the other.
Sheer entertainment. And that's what you want to see. And those guys, let's get it right, if they do fight again, I hope that it's not, you know, they won't have another draw, certainly, because somebody...
You don't know. Winner. It might be the same fight all over again.
Let's just hope not.
I favour Fraser in the second fight for some reason.
I would go with Wardley for them.
I picked Wardley to win by late stoppage. Yeah. That was my pick. And why did you pick him winning? I mean, I had him on my card, 114, 112. There is an argument for Fraser as well, I think, because people have... Barry Jones argued back with me this week, even that 115, 112 card, which I couldn't see, because with a two-point deduction, that's 117, 112.
Right.
I didn't see that differential.
You see, the only difference for me was, like I say, it seesawed either way, ebbed and flowed the whole way through. And the better boxer, the better all-round boxer...
Is Fraser.
Yeah, by 100 miles.
Exactly.
Because, you know, held his shape really nicely, he was jabbing quite nicely.
Lovely uppercuts.
It wasn't enough, but that was his only sort of calling card.
Yeah.
He couldn't back it up.
Yeah.
There was nothing else. It wasn't an uppercut and a hook and a cross. It was just single shots, do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
It wasn't any combination punches.
Mm.
He fought at a frenetic pace, but maybe that's his pace. Where I think Wardley, on the other hand, once he gets his act together, because his defence, he didn't have a defence, he fought with his face quite a lot, and he was prepared just to try and walk through Clark's his onslaught. You can't do that in heavyweight boxing. That's why he got rocked, then he rocked the other guy back. It was like seesaw like that. But I think that with Wardley, once he gets his basic fundamentals right, gets his hands in place, works on his stamina, because he's clearly, the pair of them aren't fit enough. They're not.
Oh, how can you say that?
No, they're not fit enough, because if they were fit enough, they wouldn't have collapsed at the end of the fight. If you're fit enough, I've done 12 rounds before at a frenetic pace, still been able to stand, still been able to have a conversation. I can only look at those guys on my level of fitness. And I know it's different being at a flyweight and a lightweight divisions. I'm not carrying that sort of body mass or that body weight. I understand that.
Yeah.
However, when you look at other heavyweights from yesteryear, their stamina levels were off the Richter scale.
15 rounds. 27 rounds back in the 1910s.
Listen,
a barge off Benicia in California.
Exactly. Let's just look at the 15-round status.
Bare knuckle, you know, 27 rounds.
Jesus Christ. Listen, that's when boxing was quite brutal.
You could have done 27 rounds, though, couldn't you? You could have done 150 rounds. You were a machine. You were a machine. Come on, let's be honest about this.
No, you know what I used to base my fitness on? Just doing the basic things well, which means going to bed at like 8 o'clock at night, 7 o'clock at night, 6 o'clock on a summer's day, getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning and going doing my runs.
I think those two are living the life, by the way. I don't think they're...
No, I don't think they're playing
Clark
that.
And Wardley.
I don't think they're playing that, but they haven't found that level of dedication yet because they're not at that level. Do you see what I mean?
Do they belong... I've placed them both in the top 20 of heavyweights in the world right now.
They're not world class.
They're not world class.
None of them are world class, no.
What do you mean
none
of them are world class?
Excuse me?
When you say none of them...
Sorry, those two boxers that we're talking about right now, Clark and Wardley...
Neither of those two are world-class?
They're not world-class right now.
Have they got the capability to be world-class?
All day long. They can easily become world-class fighters.
Yeah.
They just need the experience, which they haven't had yet. That's not a slight on them.
Will that have done for them, those 12 rounds had then?
Once you go 12 hard rounds like that, mentally, you can do it. If needs be and it comes to it, you can grit your gum shield, bite on that gum shield, grit your teeth, and you can slug it out.
How deep into the well? You've been there. You know what it's like. You've been 12 rounds. Was it in your 40-odd fights? Did you go 12 rounds? Was it 15 times or something?
Mentally and physically draining.
Yeah,
takes days sometimes.
Does it take something of your life out of you?
Yeah, 100%, 100%.
So even though in this kind of weird, diverse prism, their stock's risen.
Yeah.
Because the reception they got in the after party, I'm telling you, everyone went silent.
Yeah, sure.
And I'd had to say to Fraser, you know your stock's risen now. No one will ever say anything bad about you again.
No.
And he said, no. Yeah. I said, no, Fraser, that reception you had in the Intercontinental when you walked into the big bar with 300 people and then it all
and
went quiet.
Clapping. Yeah, sure.
I said, that will happen for you in Burton-on-Trent in Las Vegas.
That's appreciation for what you've just given.
But what does that do to someone mentally?
Yeah, but see...
Makes them grow, doesn't it?
Yeah, but if he gets drunk on the adulation...
I don't think he's that kind of guy.
Yeah, I'm just saying, though. Let's just say he is. Yeah, if he gets drunk on the adulation, then his career's over, because he's going to be looked for the pats on the back and all the adulation and the well done.
People get drunk on it when they've got 200 million in the bank.
Yeah, sure.
When they're being offered movie roles. Right? I think they're both hungry.
Yeah, sure.
They both deserve a massive payday, in my view, if they fight again, 40,000 at Portman Road or...
But that's not what's in question, is it? What's in question is what that fight took out of each of them, and you won't know that until they fight the next time round.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I happen to think he's taking more out of Clark than he did Wardley, although Wardley looked like he'd just been through a wrecking machine.
you know, because of the optics of the damage. Yeah.
Because of that. Mm. But I think he will improve more than Clark.
Well, he had no amateur career. Did a few white collar fights.
There's your answer.
And I met his mum and I said, what did he do between the age of 12 and 18? Yeah. She said, he was just hanging around. He's a lovely kid.
Yeah. Yeah, you know? That's what I kind of got from him, because when I looked at his style, like I say, you can see that Clark is well schooled.
Do you mind you of Dillian White a little bit? Fabio Wardley. He's got that same dog in him, hasn't he?
When
he's hurt, he's going to come and fight you till you nail him to the
in
canvas.
That respect, but stylistically, you
know. Oh, stylistically,
but
yeah.
But yeah, in terms of his character and his persona, the way he carries himself, and that never say die attitude, yeah, sure. Of course he does. He's got that real sort of dog in him. But he needs to, you know. What he needs right now, I wouldn't even go looking for Clark in my next fight. If I was him, if I was his promoter or his manager, I'd take him off to America, I'd get him some top sparring, I'd get him 2-3 fights in the States, not over here, I'd get him 2-3 fights in the States where he can learn his trade and then bring him back to fight.
Well, that's Duke's view. This week, founder and CEO of Boxer, Ben Shalom, joined Jim White and Spencer Oliver in the studio and outlined his intentions for a rematch.
Selfishly, we were hoping to go again very quickly, mm-hmm. but you knew straight away it's going to take some serious time. I think Fabio in particular will need to see how damaged his face is and his nose. I'd like to see it this year. I think we can be hopeful it happens this year. It won't happen in the summer. I don't think they'll be quite ready.
Well, it's very tempting for the promoter, isn't it?
Yeah. Of course it is. But, you know, Ben Shalom's a very astute individual, and he'll look at that fight again and he'll watch it again, and I'm sure he will get his charge a little bit more experience. Do you see what I mean? He needs a couple of little 10-rounders under his belt, or maybe an 8-rounder, he knocks somebody out, and then a 10-rounder to bring him on a little bit more, mentally I'm talking about. I don't take nothing away from his coach, because he's obviously got a good coach, but the kid needs schooling, because he was getting hit far too often. Mm. But his style didn't change, because he didn't know how. Mm. But as you said, he didn't have the greatest amateur pedigree. He's got none.
Yeah. I mean, he's got white-collar boxing.
Right,
I mean,
so he's got no point of reference.
That's still pro boxing unlicensed, isn't it, basically?
Exactly. So he's got no point of reference. It's not like he's been an ABA champion, boxer for England. He's got all that pedigree behind him. He doesn't have that, clearly. And that's what was shown in that fight.
Before we go to break, does it rank with other big British
domestic heavyweight title fights? Yes, it does.
David Haye and Derek Chisora?
Yes, it does. 100%.
We're going back here. Joe Bugner and Sir Henry Cooper.
These two, really, they probably surpassed that, because they left every ounce of energy. They left their heart, mind, body, and soul in that ring.
Yeah.
They both wanted to win so badly.
Yeah.
Like you saw at the end of the fight, Clark, he couldn't even stand up. He was absolutely wrecked.
His team were saying, stand up.
Well, you know, sometimes if you sit down or you go down, it's harder to get up. Your adrenaline levels just plummet.
And
you can't even... I've seen it before in many, many fights with other fighters that after fights, when they've left every ounce of energy in that ring, they can't even move. You know?
Your views on boxing are always, and this is what I'm recalling now, they're always incredibly strong, very honest. And I'm really glad to hear that from you. Because you're highly critical, but in a very kind of intellectual way about it. But you've just said you're not.
Oh, okay.
And you don't need to be, because you're Duke McKenzie MBE.
Oh, okay.
And what you said just there, though, for me, says it all. They left their heart, their soul, their body, everything they had in that room. But I'm glad that you're saying that.
But that's what I was taught. That was exactly what I was taught from my coach. If you're going to train for 8, 10, 12, 15 weeks for a fight, whether it be domestic, British, European or world level, you've got to be prepared to leave every ounce of energy in that ring. What's the point of coming out of that ring saying, I could have done more, or I should have done more, or I should have done this, or I should have done that? That's your opportunity to do this or that. So you've got to get in there and do it. So when you do come out, there's no questions to be asked.
Dan Morley, 8-0, had his career on hold for a couple of years, but he is back. He's also a bit of an Instagram sensation, analysing fights from the past. Fascinating stuff from Mr. Morley.
I've just come in and smashed the punch machine up, so it's a nice chaotic start.
Did you beat Aloys Jr., who's the record holder? I think he's like 982 or something.
That's crazy. No,
what did
I didn't.
You get?
I got 897.
Oh, so that's not bad.
Yeah, it's not bad.
So you're a puncher, yeah?
Yeah.
But punch by train. KOs, isn't it?
No. Just the one KO.
Were you talking like that?
No, but no, I've boxed a lot of tough journeymen that have loads and loads of fights, you know yourself, and they just don't get stopped. But I like to highlight, actually, on my Instagram, how essential they are and the lessons they give.
Oh, it's so important. It's a really... I've been talking a lot about journeymen recently, actually. I mentioned Gary Stretch earlier.
He wasn't a journeyman.
No, I mentioned Gary Stretch. He was saying about, early in your career, what were you, 47 fights, wasn't it?
Yeah, 42.
42 fights. When you have that many fights and you reach world championship level, and you're... I don't know if it happens quite so much anymore, but there are 10 fights you have in the first 25 that are against those guys who you are meant to beat and they're meant to lose to you. But without them... And talk to us about this. They're almost like the glue in the sport.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, transitioning from amateur to professional boxing or white collar, wherever you've transitioned, but typically amateur to professional boxing is so different. It's worlds apart. Mm. Even though you're only typically boxing 4 rounders when you start, unless you're like freakishly good like Inoue or Lomachenko, you need to transition. Like, you know, the wraps are a lot harder. The gloves are a lot smaller. The lights are even a lot hotter. You got to do the ticket sales
as well. The rounds are longer.
Yeah, rounds are longer. You got so many. So going in with those guys, although it does look like you're just beating them and you're just building up your record, if you go in with the really good ones, and they'll do all the dirty little tricks for you. And I used an example. I boxed a guy called Danny Little, and he smothered me, and I couldn't get him off me. But there was a later fight, a much harder fight I had against Lewis Isaacs, where I used that same trick. And it helped me to win the fight. So
that's
they're interesting.
Very important.
Do. Journeymen, they're like the fundamentals of the sport. They are they're needed in the sport. I had several journeymen that I fought, like Peter Buckley. What did he have? Like 200 fights?
Yeah,
220
he did have 200,
fights,
yeah,
something
yeah.
like that.
Lost about 199 of them.
Yeah. You know, so like I say, they're a very, very important part of your development. And what you just said there, I can relate to, obviously, because sometimes you might box a journeyman early in your fight and you learn from him. You beat him, you beat the crap out of him, but you learn from him. Then later on, when you step up, and you're fighting a much more seasoned fighter who tries the same thing, you can cope with it, and
you know exactly how to deal with it. Yeah. Well, Gary Stretch was saying to me that one journeyman he fought early in his career came in and saw him early in the night, and he didn't know it was the guy he was fighting, and he had a can of Stella or whatever he had with him and a ham sandwich.
I know a journeyman I've seen outside the ring. They smell of fags,
they've just dropped their scaffolding bag and they've been working till 5 p.m.
Yeah.
And bless them. And Gary didn't know he was fighting this guy, and then he ended up in the ring. This is probably like eighth fight or something, and there he is opposite him, and he knocked him out. Mm. And the guy came to him afterwards and said, no, because he came into the Gary's changing room, so he really admired him, he thought he'd go on to be a world champion, blah blah blah. When he knocked him out afterwards, he was really peed off with him because he said, now you've knocked me out, I can't fight for a month. And I've been fighting every week. And that's the other thing they do.
Yeah.
Some of these guys get a flaming call.
That's their job.
The day before.
That's their job.
To get there, and they'll do their plastering job, or they'll do what they normally do.
Yeah.
Drop the kids at school, do a day's work.
Yeah.
And then come to the... And I mean, I've even... spoken to journeymen before, and they're going to remain nameless. They've ended up having a box of T-shirts as their payment.
Hard way to make a living. Very hard, especially if you have hundreds of fights as well. It's so tough. And credit to him.
I think when I boxed Peter Buckley, I think he drove from Birmingham on the day that we fought. That was a 6-hour drive.
Yeah. How amazing is it? We're going to get onto Dan's career in a minute, but how? Because it is a fascinating topic. Yeah. No, it is. Like you say, you're great to highlight it. That there's so many journeymen, in inverted commas, because they don't like being called journeymen, who are actually really compos mentis later on, and because a lot of them learn to be. Not hit.
They survived. They survived.
And not hit.
And a lot of them had good amateur careers.
Not hit.
They're survivors,
yeah.
isn't
they? Survivors.
A lot of them had good amateur careers. Yeah. And that's another reason people like they might not be able to sell the tickets to actually, you know, be able to have the pro career. So they're good boxers.
You're going to be here with us for two sections. We're going to get Dom McGuinness, who's a former colleague of ours at Talksport, of course. I don't know if Dom still delves in with the football. Probably does, but he's managing at the moment. Dom's a big, big boxing guy. Been all over the world with him. In fact, the funniest time, we'll get Dom in and we'll talk about when we did Scott Quigg and Oscar Valdez in the rain, actually. Uh-huh. Dom's sitting in the gallery there. He'll remember that. And we will talk about it in the next section. But you've been out of the sport, Dan. You're 8-0 in your record. 8 wins, no losses. But you haven't fought since 2022 from falling out of love with the sport. I mean, what happened there?
To be honest with you, it was a whole... there was a multitude of
different things.
Tell us
all about it. This is a chat show.
So... obviously, boxing is an extremely tough sport anyway, but the professional side of it is so tough. So I was professional for 5 years, and for two of those years, like everyone, there was a global pandemic.
Yeah.
But I was building my name on the small hall shows, and I was just about to break through. I'd had those journeyman fights, and I'd learnt, but I was pushing on to the 50-50 fights. And I had a fight, and 2 weeks out, it got cancelled. So I lost all of my money there, and I wasn't earning throughout lockdown. But I was training.
Your trade as well, though? Do you have a trade?
I've done loads of jobs, yeah. I mean, right now I teach people how to box and I do stuff online.
Else can you do, though? Come on, tell us.
Because
you seem like a very bright, kind of fully energetic person, doesn't he? There's an energy about you.
Oh, thank you. Well, for work, I mean, I worked at the airport. I worked as a
postman. What do you do at the airport?
Just rampage and, you know, just pushing the planes back, loading
the
planes.
Did you do any of the things, you know?
No, I didn't do that.
That's the film here.
Yeah. Do you do any of that to the aircraft? Keep circling, yeah, because it's not time yet.
Someone else did that. But no, I did loads. I worked on building sites, pubs. But, you know, I feel like in life you kind of have to do what you don't want to do. And I always did it around boxing.
Yeah, because you've got to make ends meet. When you're a fighter...
Oh, I see. You've got to do what you don't...
Whatever the job is, you just do it.
Well, you do what you don't want to do to find out what you do want to do. Do you know what I mean?
So we learn along the way. You've got to have an experience of things that are very tough and you don't want to do for 50 years. Yes,
exactly.
I agree.
So
but you're addicted to boxing.
Well,
you are, clearly.
I love boxing. And I always intended to come back, so... obviously, I decided to try and build a career where I could be in and around boxing during my career as a fighter and after. So the break was basically it wasn't viable for me to survive financially. I just couldn't do it. Mm. I think I looked at my last year as a pro. I earned about $5,000 all year. It was just, you know.
Dire, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. So I just decided, look, how can I put myself in a better position? So I went away and I started doing social media videos where I do lists on fighters. You know, I try and learn about as many fighters as I can. Yeah.
Worked for you, clearly.
Yeah. The following's built. People are interested.
Yeah.
I've done a little bit of journalism, a little bit of writing articles as well, because I like writing the pieces as well as doing the voiceovers. And obviously, I teach people how to box as well, so the physical side of it. But
so you're trying to take our job here?
That's the goal.
It's a brilliant sport to write about.
He's younger and he's better looking, Gareth. What do you expect?
What, than you?
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's all right. because the thing about, we're describing war in front of us.
Yeah.
We're describing someone bearing their soul. Mm. And it's deep and it's ancient fighting, isn't it? It's in us.
It's instinctive.
It's very instinctive, and it's about survival. Let me talk to you. Where are you from? How did you get started in boxing? You know, we have a big audience on a Saturday night. What brought Dan Morley into boxing?
So I'm from Mitcham originally, which isn't far from Duke, where Duke's from, Croydon. But I never really fit into Mitcham. It's a little bit rough. And I moved
to
Epsom.
That's an understatement.
Yeah.
He's being polite.
So I moved to Epsom when I was 12, which is a nicer area. And from there, I had a friend called Luke Clark.
Oh, Epsom.
Epsom, yeah. I had a friend called Luke Clark who was going to the local gym. I'm a big Chelsea fan, so I was a footballer. I played a bit of cricket, a bit of rugby, but I was really soft. So it's the same old thing. I wanted to confront my fears and improve. So I went to the gym with Luke, and halfway there I bottled it. You know, I just went home. It just wasn't for me. And eventually when I did go the next time, I just fell in love with it. And for being a shy kid that lacked confidence, you know, I wouldn't look anyone in the eye.
Mm.
Boxing did so much for me.
What was the cause of that? kind of lack of confidence and being a shy kid then, do you think?
I don't know. It's just, I mean, that was when I was really young as So it was,
so you've learned quickly through boxing. You talk about this all the time, Duke, how much it gives someone when they do it.
Yeah. Because
100%. You're being tested every time you spar, get in the ring, physicality, the running, everything's, it's all pressure, isn't it? It's a pressure you put on yourself.
Yeah. And that pressure you put on yourself is the biggest thing, especially if you want to be a really good fighter, because that's what needs to drive you. And one of the things I was always fascinated with is hearing about how nerves and how fear and boxers felt before fights. And you'd always hear people say, oh, no, I'm okay. But like, no one's okay.
No one's okay.
It's addressing that fear, knowing it's there and overcoming it. You know, it's benefited me so much.
If you don't fear as a fighter, then you're not normal. You're not human. And I don't know any fighter from Mike Tyson, you know, the biggest, baddest man on the planet to the smallest fighters in the world that always, you always have fear. You're always absolutely, your backside's falling out, you know, on fight day. It's just, it's a horrible, gut-wrenching feeling that you get. You know, doesn't matter how much training you've done, doesn't matter how many times, you know, how many fights you've had, you have the same emotion. So it's about conquering that. And the only way you can conquer it is by stepping up to it.
Yeah, going up and doing it. Yeah, and I always remember Mike Tyson because he's such a good... It's such a good example because he was the baddest man on the planet.
Yeah.
But I always remember that video of him and Teddy Atlas. He's only a teenager, but he's crying his eyes out, and Teddy Atlas is...
Puts his arm around him, right?
Yeah, puts his arm around it, and then he goes and just knocks this fella out in like 10 seconds.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's if the baddest man on the planet is crying himself, crying before a fight, then, you know, it goes to show, doesn't it?
So you're coming back. You've got your license back. You've got a huge following on social media.
Got another one now.
You've been training some stars out. Well, we're going to go into that in a minute. We're going to go to break. But when are you going to be coming back?
So I've just had my license accepted by the board. Obviously, I have to do the medicals and all of that stuff. That's just, you know, it's mandatory. And then I'm just hoping to go, you know, within the next sort of 3-4 months. Ideally, that stuff takes time. Obviously, paperwork. Got to announce a fight. Got to train for a fight.
Time to get fit though, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So just tell us before we get Dominic McGuinness in with you. If you were to pick your best three classical moments in boxing that you've analysed, or maybe the ones that have drawn the biggest attention, what are they?
I always like Harry Greb's 45-0 because it's a bit more obscure. So in 1919, he went 45-0. He actually went 52-0, and then he went like 56 fights unbeaten after that. But I like that one because he did it in a year, and he was just a bit mad, and he beat so many Hall of Famers. If I had to think of other ones as well, I like the old school stuff. Maybe like Jack Dempsey versus you know, Jess Willard, where the 20s blew up. You know, and he absolutely smashed into pieces. Yeah. I mean, he broke his jaw, his orbital bone, and like 3 ribs, and knocked out 3 teeth. So yeah, brutal.
Yeah.
And
any Willie Pep in there?
Willie Pep. Yeah, and I like
the round that he didn't land a punch. Have you done that?
Yeah, I've done that.
Could do that, I think.
They said that was a myth. They said. That was a myth.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah.
He told the journalists.
Yeah.
Fourth round.
Yeah.
Can't remember the name of the opponent. No.
Was that Willie Pep, you mean?
Willie Pep.
Yeah.
He told them before the fight.
Yeah.
And he, apparently he did win the round.
He was brilliant.
But how... You should... Duke will have an opinion on this. We're going to go to break in a minute. I've got to get this opinion from Duke. Because you haven't even eaten your Mars bar
yet. Just going to have it.
But all right. That's good, because you'll be moody about this. Because when we come back, you'll all be sweetness and light because you'll have eaten your Mars bar at the break. My friend Duke McKenzie, and we discussed this, Duke McKenzie is not yet in the Hall of Fame, and it's well overdue. I'm talking a decade and a half overdue, and I have campaigned in the past for Duke to be in the Hall of Fame. That campaign begins again. Duke McKenzie, MBE, 3-weight world champion, Hall of Fame. Hall of Fame. You've been listening to the Fight Night podcast on TalkSport. My thanks to Duke McKenzie and all our guests this week. Don't forget to subscribe to TalkSport's YouTube channel. Listen to our midweek shows. Simon Jordan and Jim White with Spencer Oliver on a Thursday. Myself with Adi Oladipo on a Tuesday. You've been listening to the Fight Night podcast on TalkSport.